There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Joining me, I have Chef Alex Stumpf, co-founder of one of Dubai's most exciting new restaurants, Bibi. Hello, Chef.
Hi, good afternoon. How
Thank are you for joining us. You've had a busy couple of days.
Yes, indeed.
Valentine's. What was on the menu last night?
Oh, we had a truffle and caviar menu, so we pumped up our most sold or famous dishes from the menu with truffle and caviar. So we talked about a lobster bar with caviar, or we had a wagyu beef with truffle. And
so all light stuff then, Chef.
Yes.
Also joining me, I have Ava Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures. Hello, lovely to see you.
Always great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining us. And Orit, founder of the Boon Coffee Company, who's here with coffee.
Yes, I'm very excited again to be here.
And Chef, you might need a bit of coffee.
Yes, indeed. I had a long night behind me, so I definitely...
Tell us, what's been keeping you up?
Well, you know, there's a one problem you have in a restaurant, which, you know, it's a good problem to have, which is when you're so busy that you can't keep up with your mise en place. And one of our main dishes is the bao, which is, you know, it's a Vietnamese bun. And it takes a lot of effort and work and time to produce quantities. And so, yeah, it took us another 4 hours after 12 o'clock.
So you got to bed at what time last night?
Yes, a little bit of overtime.
At 4 o'clock this morning. Well, thank you for joining us. Or it's looking in absolute horror.
We'll give you coffee.
So we do have coffee and we've got some food coming up. But I think first, maybe we'll have a bit of this. Food news. Now, we have been inundated with stories this week. There's absolutely loads going on. Now, guys, ladies, I'm afraid I'm directing this to mainly. Have you heard about the Lady Doritos?
No.
No?
No, but
it
sounds good.
So basically, this was a massive misstep in the world of Doritos. The CEO of PepsiCo, who owns Doritos, went on the Freakonomics podcast and said that they're thinking of developing a line of Doritos specifically for women. Can you guess why? Why do you think they felt a need to develop a special chip just for ladies?
Was it pink?
I think it's
maybe lighter.
Maybe silent crunching.
It's
more
not,
silent.
It is silent crunching. It's less dust and. Apparently, this is what she said. This is on the Freakonomics podcast, saying they're getting ready to launch snacks that are designed and differently packaged for women who like to carry a snack in their purse. I mean, really, I think we can all fit a bag of crisps in our handbags. Apparently, CEO Indra Nooyi said on a podcast that unlike men, women don't like to lick their fingers after eating a bag of Doritos. Women would love to do the same, to eat those crunchy bits at the bottom of the bag, but they don't like to do so and don't like to crunch too loudly in public. They don't lick their fingers generously and they don't like to pour the little broken pieces and flavour into their mouth. This is beyond insulting to me as a woman, I have to say. I've got no problem at all crunching loudly in public. It does really hark back to the kind of the Bic pens that were pink and, you know, designed for our special little lady fingers. There has been, as you can imagine, massive public outcry on this. Everybody from, you know, everyone on Twitter to Ellen DeGeneres talking about how, you know, we've come a long way. And in fact, we had a little clip from Ellen that we'll be playing on later on in the show. But Pepsi have now said they're not planning to do this. We will not see Dorito for ladies on the shelves after such a public outcry. And in fact, they put a tweet out saying, we already have Doritos for women. They're called Doritos.
Fantastic.
So quite right. Now, this is something that caught my attention. There's going to be a chicken nugget festival happening in the UK later this year. It's the UK's first ever chicken nugget festival, celebrating all that's good about those golden chunks of chicken, taking place in London and then in Manchester. Here's my question to you, my foodie panel this afternoon. Ava, first, if you could have a food festival about anything, what would that festival be celebrating?
Wow, this is an incredibly hard question.
I'll tell you mine first. I'll give you a 10
All
second
right,
warm-up.
Go for it.
Mine would probably be Heinz tomato soup and grilled cheese sandwiches. Like that's really just food for me. If for a bad day, you can't beat a bowl of soup. So if you really wanted to celebrate a food with, let's say, a whole day festival, guest chefs, all sorts of different, you know, different ingredients, what one food would you be celebrating?
I think it would be flatbreads from around the world, because
Ooh.
Bread in general is such a key connector across different cultures. That's what it would be for me.
Fantastic.
Comfort
okay.
food.
Chef Alex, same question.
Yeah, well, I think it's a bread, it's a quite close. Street food in general from each country, especially once we then talk bread, because each country is a different kind of bread. Whether we're talking from, you know, let's go from South America to tacos to Germany, we have normal bread. And then we have, let's go to BB, where we have obviously Vietnamese and Asian cuisine. We have Dibao. So there's lots of different breads and different ingredients, which is whether it's just the protein or just the vegetables or spices, which completely enhance or change the flavors of the individual dishes.
Okay, so bread fest. It's really what we're planning.
Breakfast.
Exactly.
I love that.
Yeah. Carb fest.
Yes.
Carb. All right. I mean, obviously, you are the coffee queen of Dubai, so I have to say, you can't have coffee.
No, but what about chocolate?
Chocolate festival.
But I'm sure there's a lot of chocolate festivals.
Well, you never know. You never know. We could start one in Dubai, a chocolate and coffee festival. So we'd love to hear from you this afternoon. You can get in touch on 4001 and let us know your food festival fantasy. There is a chicken nugget festival taking place in the UK later on this year. Now, food envy. I think we all get a little bit of food envy. Some of us get it worse than others. And Brits apparently suffer from food envy once a week. Here's my question. What food do you think would come top of this survey of causing the biggest food envy? Can I give you a clue?
Is it going to be avocado on toast?
Nope.
Thank God.
Here's a confession for you. I actually don't like avocado. I know, which basically means I should not be allowed to exist in 2018.
Exactly,
yeah, I know. So it's unsurprising. It's not a salad. You know, it's the cheesy garlic bread, the pizza,
that makes sense.
The cheesecake, the things that arrive on the table and you just go, oh, I'm really regretting that Caesar salad right about now. There was a study of 2,000 adults that found that cheesy garlic bread is the biggest food-inducing starter, followed by nachos, crispy duck pancakes, ribs and onion rings. When it came to main course, pizza was most likely to leave fellow diners battling that green-eyed monster, along with fish and chips.
It's terrible.
Steak. Alex, you must now be an expert when it comes to ordering food. So
I wouldn't say an expert, but like, especially if we talk about food in general, like in 2018, like, I mean, people should be by now educated, because, you know, food has been around obviously a long, and especially living in Dubai or in Europe, you have exposed to too many different cultures, different cuisines, where I think you can go away from, you know, nachos and cheese and pizzas. And I mean, you can have healthy ones, but still, it's like, you know.
I think that's what gets the juice flowing, isn't it? When that arrives, you think, oh, man, that's going to taste really good. What I thought was really interesting is that the loved ones bear the brunt, with almost 1 in 4 surveyed saying it's led to a row at the table. And 2/3 said disagreements are usually between their and their partner. Falling outs have happened when someone tried to take food from the plate, and others said they've even stolen it when the other person wasn't looking, which really reminds you of that Joey from Friends.
Exactly.
Where, yeah.
I don't know what kind of people they surveyed. I mean, don't you naturally order to be able to share? Like, that's the rule at my table. I mean, you know.
You can, absolutely.
Because obviously we're talking about sharing food later, because BB is very social dining. Are you a food sharer?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's so unsaid that we're going to be picking out of each other's plates. And I think it's also a little bit of Indian and Arab culture that, you know, if someone is staring at your plate and you don't share it with them, your stomach is going to hurt. I mean, that's the saying. Your stomach is going to hurt if you don't share. So I find that appalling that you would have a fight over someone picking out of your plate. Like, I love the idea of the whole point of going to a restaurant. It's a social experience. You order a bunch of things that you haven't tasted before and you share it with everyone.
Chef Alex, where are you from, and how has that kind of influenced your thoughts about sharing?
Well, I'm from Germany, so we not necessarily share food.
Alex doesn't share food.
Yeah, do share food. It's not about that. But we're in Germany, like, you know, where Emma grew up, and at this time, obviously, they were more like individual plates. Everybody's his own plate. Everybody would eat the same. So, or when you go in restaurants, then everybody choose their own main course, their own starters. Yes, it's in family. There's always a sharing going on. Or when you staff, then you just, you know, see if somebody else would like to try it. But yeah.
So yeah, is it worth getting into a fight over? I'm not sure.
You know, actually, one of the things that I do is when I'm looking at a menu, so for example, if I'm out with my husband, he will always pick a dish that I know he's not going to like. And I'll take one for the team, and I will order the dish that I know he's going to like. Because when we taste each other's plates, we always are going to exchange. And I'll just take it. Because for me, the idea of knowing that, you know, the people around the table are enjoying the experience is more important to me. So,
What a giver.
I know. I hope he's listening to this. I haven't got a Valentine's Day gift yet. So just putting one
in there. We'll end the podcast later on. Do stay with us. When we come back, we're going to go back in history and find out if Dickens thought that coffee drinkers were evil and tea drinkers were good. We are talking food, cooking live in the studio, latest food news, plus your chance to win a fantastic night out. I'm joined in the studio by Chef Alex, from co-founder and chef at one of Dubai's most exciting new openings, Bibi at DIFC, Arv Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures, and Orid Mohammed, founder of the Boon Coffee Company, who is brewing some coffee right now. We were talking earlier about Lady Doritos. The CEO of PepsiCo has said that at one time they were considering creating a crisp just for the fairer sex. Let's hear what Ellen DeGeneres had to say about that.
We are finally feeling the courage to speak up against things that are wrong, and after years of inequality, it feels like things are starting to change. And then I saw this headline, Doritos for Her. I'm sorry, what? All this time I've been eating man chips? You heard about this, right? Everybody's heard about this? Doritos is owned by Pepsi, and their CEO said that women want a chip that's less crunchy. Who doesn't want a crunchy chip? That is, what woman doesn't want a crunchy chip? Who's complaining about that? If your chip isn't crunchy, it's not a chip, it's a wet potato. After Pepsi makes a chip that isn't crunchy, they're going to make a soda that's not wet. That's their, they're really on it. I don't know when this happened. Like, when I missed that march. What do we want? Quiet chips. When do we want it? Now! The CEO says that women and men eat chips very differently. They say that when men get to the bottom of a bag of chips, they get all the little broken pieces and they put them in their mouth and then they lick their fingers with tremendous glee, which is one of the reasons I don't have a husband. And then they said that the CEO says that women would love to pour the broken chips into their mouth, but they don't. And they don't know why. Maybe we're not strong enough to lift the bag all the way. I'm joking. It's because we're not animals and we respect ourselves. That's why. That's why.
So, ladies of Dubai, eat and crunch those crisps with glee this weekend. And I'm happy to report that Doritos has responded to massive social media outcry about this sexist chip and will not be releasing it. Now, from chips to coffee. And I have to say, we've got a lovely smell already in the studio. We've got some coffee brewing, Orit. Now, here, I wanted to talk about coffee. Dickens, the famed author whose birthday it was last week, he obviously had a huge variety of characters and constantly inviting each other for tea, but actually some of them drank coffee. What's actually come to light and result of a new book called Dinner with Dickens, which combines passion for English food and essays about Dickens, is that it was the evil people that drank coffee in Dickens novels. Orit, any response to this?
Well, you know, coffee makes you think clearer and very, can I say artistic? Maybe makes people think more. Tea just puts you to sleep. That's the problem.
You need energy for evil. Is that fair to say?
Yes, that's what I'm sticking to that story. Coffee makes you think. tea puts you to sleep. That's it. That's the simple truth.
Chef Alex, you were up until 4 o'clock this morning.
Indeed.
After your Valentine's dinner and then cooking bao for the weekend, which is a very, very popular component in many of the dishes. You're a big coffee fan?
I am. Most likely I'm going to drink cappuccino or Americano. Or espresso, actually, double espresso.
It's just all the coffees, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Like whatever keeps me awake.
Just keep on naming them. Ava?
I think I would be evil without coffee.
I don't think you're alone in that. It's like first I drink the coffee and then I get stuff done.
Exactly.
So we'd love to hear your opinion if you think all coffee drinkers are evil. But having said that, Ava's one of the nicest people in Dubai, so I don't think that can be true.
Ava may disagree on this side.
Now, we're talking about food waste. It's a really hot topic here in Dubai and worldwide. And a new study has shown, this was a university in Sweden, they've basically looked at supermarkets, looking at the biggest wasteful products. So across three categories, the biggest offenders, how much of each type was discarded from the supermarket, the climate impact of this waste, and the financial loss for stores. And the biggest culprit, bananas. Lettuce represented 17% of the cost of waste, but bananas, and it all comes down to the consumer, because not many people are buying the bananas with those brown spots, and so many get thrown away. Experts estimate that approximately one-third of food is wasted worldwide. In developed countries, approximately 40% of food waste occurs at retail and consumer levels. Now, Ava, you've been looking into a new app that's launched here in Dubai. Do you think this could help? What is it? And tell us about it.
So this is very exciting. We have, I think it's three Scandinavian ladies who've started an app called Bon App, and you can download it on your Android or your iPhone. Essentially, what it does is it collates different restaurants that have excess, basically surplus food, and then gives you the option, you as a diner, of being able to purchase that food either as a takeout or dine in, and you just purchase it through the app. You can go there and have this discounted meal, and essentially you get the benefit of a discounted meal, but you help that restaurant clear off some of their excess capacity that might have been thrown out. So it's both sides essentially come away with a win-win, and you feel better about actually helping a restaurant get rid of something that might have just been thrown away.
Chef Alex, coming from the industry point of view, how could you see this working for a chef? I mean, you're obviously thinking a lot about the bottom line. It's not just cooking, it's the finances as well. Is food waste a problem from your side?
Food waste in restaurants, I wouldn't say it's a problem, but the occur, it depends on how, let's say, high-end the restaurant is. However, this business waste, I mean, it's a very great idea, and it's been around many in Europe or in the US for a long time, where different companies, actually in London even, they drive to different restaurants and collecting their food, not necessarily reselling it, but give it to a charity, like to homeless people, homeless shelters, etc., to actually reuse and make sense of it instead of just trashing it down.
So really excited to hear this launching, and also the restaurants that are participating in that. My concern, because I go to bed at about 9:30, would be I'd have to stay up late in order to benefit from this.
No, not at all. I actually went on, so I've downloaded the app, and I went on the app, and there are some things that, for example, restaurants have listed that you can buy by about 1 p.m. So these are time sensitive, so that could be a lunch. That could be a lunch thing. There was a kale salad, I think, listed up, and some smoothies. So whatever that restaurant feels they want to get rid of that stock and prepare something fresh, there you go. You have the access to that.
So it's a new app called Bon App.
Yeah, it's BONAPP, and you can just download that for free. And essentially, you just paper order. Basically, what they say is that they've taken advantage of two things. A, it's a really competitive market where restaurants fight for their customers. And secondly, they've seen that restaurants often over-prepare food, which means that if it's not sold, it'll end up in the bin. So this is a great way of being able to deal with both issues.
Hopefully see some more restaurants signing up for that.
I'm joined in the studio this afternoon for our Thursday brunch show by Orit Mohammed, founder of the Boon Coffee Company, Ava Ahmed, frying pan adventure founder and all-round girl about town on the food front, and Chef Alex Sump, the co-founder of BB, which is one of Dubai's most exciting new restaurants. But first, how about some...
the latest food news.
Lots happening in the world of food at the moment. And one story that caught my eye, which was on What's On, so regional story, is that the world's first MasterChef TV restaurant is coming to Dubai. MasterChef the TV Experience, it's a restaurant opening up in the Wyndham West Bay Dubai Marina Hotel, is going to be based on the popular reality TV show. I'm a big fan of MasterChef. Would I go to the restaurant? I really don't know. So the premise behind it is the diners will be able to choose from an ever-changing menu featuring dishes kind of conceived on the show by all the contestants from 52 countries. It's the most popular cookery television format in the world. Here's my question to you, Chef Alex. How do you feel about programs like MasterChef, like where you can get instant fame? Or do you feel like you really need to go through the ranks to make your name?
Well, I think MasterChef is a really great series, and I watched it myself. My wife is but she is a very big fan of it, and it's very interesting to see what's happening and what everybody's thoughts about cooking and mystery ingredients, and then you start off, 2 hours or half an hour time to create dishes, which is really great. It's a lot of creation in there, and, you know, it keeps your brain moving. Instant fame... Yeah, it comes instantly, and I think it believes it instantly goes as well. It's not really something that stays for long.
A flash in the pan, yes. You excuse the pun. Ava, would you fancy going to this, or are you more a fan of kind of the homegrown concepts?
More a fan of the homegrown concepts. And I also find, I actually can't watch shows like that. It's just there's too much pressure, there's too much tension.
You find for me, it stressful.
I find it really stressful. Cooking for me is like de-stress. You know, that's the exact opposite of what I think about cooking. So yeah, it really does stress me out to see that stuff.
All right.
Yes, if I want non-professionals cooking, I would cook at home and eat my own food. So if I go out, I want people who know what... I want to be sure that, you know, they went through and they thought about the food and they worked at it. So that's why I go out. Otherwise, I cook myself. I'm the unprofessional cook at home.
Love the logic. Because Chef Alex, where did you get your start? And how did you really kind of start making your way in the world of food?
Oh, wow. Well, I started with like 20 years ago, so it's a long, 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 long ride. I started in Germany. Germany is very, very driven by that whatever occupation you do, you need to have a study first, whether it's theoretical and practical mix. And the maturity starts between 2.5 to 3 years to complete, and then you're a professional in your field, and then you keep growing experience over the years. So yeah, I started in Germany and stayed there for 8 years, and then I moved out and traveled a little bit the world between England, Dubai, US, Turkey.
And how long have you been in Dubai now?
Oh, this year, 10 years.
Wow. 10 years, yeah. Yes. Dubai decade.
Yes.
We're going to be talking later in the show about your new restaurant, BB, which is a fantastic addition to Dubai, just opened to DIFC at the end of 2017. And we've also got a competition to win dinner for two, so stay tuned for our mystery ingredient. Got some more food news now. International food etiquette rules that might surprise you. Now, we're all coming from very different parts of the world here in the studio, which is always interesting. So we've got Orit, obviously, coming from talking about the coffee. Now, in Italy... they don't drink cappuccino after lunch.
I agree.
You do?
I do. I think cappuccinos are, any milky drinks are heavy. So to drink after having a full meal, I don't understand it. But then again, I don't understand people who order mango juice with their dinner
you
and lunch.
You looked at Ava there, all right? Yes.
I know the assumption that I'm Indian and have to have a mango juice.
I am sure you do.
But that's exactly what the Italians say, that, you know, it's cappuccino can be a replacement for a meal.
Yes.
And having, you know, a cappuccino and a croissant would constitute breakfast for a lot of people. Either way, you won't see Italians ordering a cappuccino after lunchtime, and especially after a big dinner. And it's a very quick way to be marked out as a tourist if you're there.
There you go.
There you go.
You must have not had a good dessert to order a whole cappuccino after. I would think you would be so full if you had a proper meal, especially in Italy. You have a whole pizza, you have pasta. Who needs cappuccino then?
And staying in Italy, there is a rule that I found really interesting. You do not ask for parmesan on your pizza, or you don't ask for it at all unless it's explicitly offered. In Rome, the traditional cheese is pecorino, And the rule of thumb is if it's not offered, you do not ask for it. Another coffee rule, Orit. When drinking coffee with Bedouins in the Middle East, you shake the cup at the end.
Yes.
Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, that's when they drink the qahwa in here. Every time you finish, somebody would refill the cups. That's
just automatically.
Yes, and that's to show hospitality, you know, to just for your guest. So when you shake it at the end, it's to signify that you're finished, you've had enough. So if you don't shake, you will keep getting refills.
If you shook it after one cup of coffee, would that be considered rude?
Not necessarily. Maybe you just came from another person's house. So to have that first cup is insufficient, I think.
So that was an interesting one. Really well-known one here in the region, but I think would surprise people in the rest of the world about you do not eat with your left hand. South India, yes. You don't even touch the plate with your left hand while eating. It's because the left hand is associated with bodily functions. Can we say that? But if you're left-handed, you can use your left hand, but you need to take your right hand out of play. Now, here's a question for you on the topic of food etiquette. If you're out enjoying dinner, would you excuse yourself to go to the bathroom in the middle of your meal? Or would you wait until the next course, or would you just hang on until the end? I'm trying to think of a time where I've left the table to go to the bathroom.
It doesn't happen very often with me, but the kinds of places that I typically go to, A, they may not even have a bathroom, so that's a luxury. No, but I mean, you know, if you need to go, just go. I mean, the focus is you need to enjoy your food.
No, not if you're sharing a meal like Ethiopian food and it's a sharing plate.
Really?
No, do not get up in the middle and go. I don't think you should.
I'd be afraid of someone taking the food away if I was to leave the table.
Maybe, I guess.
Arva, you can't share and go in the middle.
Well, in the royal family, they've got very explicit rules about what to do if you need to go to the bathroom during a dinner party. The first part, the royals simply say, excuse me, before leaving and don't offer any explanation about going. If they're in the middle of eating and haven't finished their meal yet, the royal family must cross their knife and fork on the plate. It's a signal to serving staff to leave the plate as it is. But if they're finished, they need to join their knife and fork together and position at an angle with the handles pointing towards the bottom right of the plate. Learning something new.
That's so stressful. Just don't go to the bathroom at all. Like, just don't go.
Just can't get it right. Now, we're joined in the studio this afternoon by Chef Alex from Vivi, who is a fantastic chef. And this restaurant has really blown me away, actually. I was talking about it a lot to a lot of people after I visited a few weeks ago. Can you tell us a little bit about the concept, Chef Alex?
Okay, Bibi's is all about social dining. The restaurant is over three floors. We have a restaurant floor, we have a kitchen floor, which we're considering as the chef's table. And then we have upstairs the third floor, like the podium, the lounge.
Because it wasn't an art gallery, right?
It was an art gallery, yes. And when we first saw it, it was like instant love, instant of a restaurant, and it was so different and so complex, and still it made so much sense on what we had not necessarily exactly planned at that time, but our initial concept, what we wanted to create, it just made perfect sense. And to be different and to go away from large scale restaurants, open restaurants where you walk in,
honestly, that's what really struck me. I think in Dubai we're so used to these big spaces, and you go in and no matter even if there's 50, 60 people in there, it still feels empty and echoey and impersonal. Whereas actually what you've done with that space is incredibly clever, because there's five different kind of eating areas.
At the end of the day, we have five different areas. Wow.
So there's little, we came in from the street level at DIFC and went down steps, and it feels like a little kind of subterranean, felt very European eating area with booths. Like a banquet along the sides, and then you go upstairs. There's lots of stairs. I really feel
it's
for your serving staff.
52 steps all the way up.
Your servers must have good thighs.
Yes,
that's all
yes.
I'm saying. And no heels.
Yes.
And then you go up and you've got the kitchen level?
Yes, we have the kitchen level in the second, and then in the third, one and a half levels up, basically. If you look at it, it's the bar.
It's got a little secret hidden garden area.
And then
there's
the garden, yes.
I think this is a really smart move, to be honest, from a kind of practical point of view. You can seat people together. People can have their own choice of where they sit that kind of resonates with them, whether it is that cozy inside feel or wanting to sit out on the terrace. And tell us about the food, Alex.
The food is, we call it Eastern cuisine. We wanted to bring something together when in Dubai, people are used to a lot of different cuisines, obviously. But because it's a hub and it's very central and lots of things meet, when we talk about Eastern, it's all below Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, going all the way Asia, whether it's Vietnam and then Japan, Korea, etc. We really touched a little bit of the Middle Eastern, where we captured a little bit of it, a little bit more to expose, obviously, the region. Use ingredients like frikke. We use hummus, but we twist it a little bit around to make it more, not healthy, because it's healthy already, but a little bit modernizing, a little bit different to what is on the market. So we have the supergrown hummus, which is made out of edamame with spinach and basil and mint and garlic, obviously. So it's, you know, quite healthy looking, and it's healthy for your body, and it's, you know, something you don't find everywhere.
So some of the because it's split into sections. So you have the bites, you have the barbecue, you've got bowls, and then desserts. The bites, I thought, was a really interesting part of the menu, because we love the cauliflower popcorn, which I'm not a big cauliflower fan, but that blew my mind. And the Brussels sprouts. You've gone for, dare I say it, quite unsexy vegetables and made them absolutely delicious. So we're going to be trying some of those dishes later on in the show. It's the Thursday Brunch Show. Really excited to be joined in the studio by Chef Alex Stumpf, co-founder of one of Dubai's most exciting new restaurants, Bibi's DIFC. Ava Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures is here, and Orid Mohammed, the founder of the Boone Coffee Company. Now, we are really excited because some food is coming out. Yes, Chef Alex just showed me some as if, like, would you like some? Yes, I would definitely like some. Chef Alex, take a seat if you can, and tell us, it looks super vibrant. What are we about to eat?
So this is the super green hummus, which we just talked about before. So it's hummus, but we twist it up with edamame, which obviously is ingredient from Japan. And we mix it together with chickpeas, with tahini, with lime, lemon, garlic, edamame, and basil and mint.
Yum. It looks super fresh, really spring-like. And it's served with what, Alex?
Now, these are bao chips. So
bao chips?
Bao chips. So Bibi is obviously, it's about the bao. The main core product is the bao.
I'm really sorry about the crunching you're about to hear.
It's a man chip.
I'm going to eat it. I'm just going to go for it.
So obviously, as it's about the bao, we have different varieties. Well, we make the same dough, but we make different products out of it, whether it's the bao chips, the bao nut, the bao brioche, the bao bun itself. And this is one
but
of
it's
them.
So thin. How do you make, because it looks like a chip, right? Whereas more of a thicker dough.
Yes, so usually the bao is it's a yeast dough, so we remove the yeast and we just really roll it out very, very thin. We add chia seeds inside there, so it's another.
So it's healthy, right?
It is. And it's not fried. This is.
How do you prepare it?
We just bake it in the oven.
The hummus itself is delicious. You really can taste that basil coming through, and it feels actually very kind of international in that sense that you've got, as you say, the edamame, the garlic, it's touching on flavors from all over the world. Can I ask you, what is a hummus? Does it have to have chickpeas, or could you make it from anything?
No, it has to be hummus.
Chickpeas, yes. It has to be chickpeas. So that's the base, and you're just adding your own flair.
Exactly.
Guys, you're having a crunch as well. What's the verdict? You've both got full mouths.
So the hummus is almost I wouldn't be able to tell that it's hummus per se. I would think maybe it's really good. It's really good. More like chutney kind of taste it has.
Yes.
It has a chutney.
I think that's just the mint in it, perhaps, coming through.
I'm not sure. Yeah, but it's really good. Definitely.
It's really
refreshing.
Smooth and refreshing, exactly. Whereas I think of hummus being a heavier dish, you know, whereas actually this tastes really bright and vibrant. And I think maybe that lime is lifting it all.
Yes.
So this is on the bites menu.
This is the bites menu, yes.
So if you came in, you could have come in for an after work drink and have some bites.
Probably one of your first dishes you would order while you go through the menu. This is one you keep snacking on it while you check, you get your drinks, and then you choose.
Talk a little bit longer so I can eat, please.
I do love the flattened bao crisps, or whatever you call them. I mean, those are really delicious.
Really
and they're
clever.
Not oily. They're not, you know, they're just super crunchy.
Absolutely delicious. So can you tell us where the inspiration came from opening this restaurant? You've opened it with your wife, co-founder.
Yes, co-founder Shabnam Rajput, Stumpf.
Ah, nearly got it wrong.
And then Spiro Banagakis. So we met like quite a while back, and Shab and Spiro were the partnered up, I can't remember, like 2012 or 13. And then it was always the main goal that we were going to open our own restaurant.
So where did you meet, the three of you? Where did you come together?
In
Dubai?
In the restaurant, yes. In the restaurant. I mean, Shab, I met already in London. We worked together there. And then Spiro, we met in Dubai. But back in the days, we had like communal friends in London. But we never met really. But we met in Dubai. So, and then obviously it clicked and, you know, we get on. And it was really a dream that, you know, we come from all three from different angles of a restaurant business, which made then really sense to put all together and open BB's.
So what, yeah, in terms of food, you're coming from the German point of view, but the food isn't German at all. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it's not at all.
Are your parents upset that you've had the opportunity to open a restaurant and you're not doing it in German?
No, I don't think so. My my parents are they're coming from the restaurant business as well. But my dad was always, or my father was always pushing me to travel and go out of the usual regional cuisine of Germany, get international, get traveling down the world. This was the goal, and I made it happen, and this was the end product we have now today.
So has that always been the aim when you started cooking? Was it always the goal to open your own restaurant?
Yes. Yes. It's, I think, the majority of the chefs who start cooking, love the cuisine, love eating, love the business, because it's not just a normal business you do. It takes heart, sweat, blood, everything. So once you're in it and you're passionate about it, then the goal is really for yourself to, you know, to fulfill a dream.
Really easy. You can text us on 4001 or message us using the free Dubai Eye app, or even give us a call, 04-423-1010. Have your say on any of the topics and news this afternoon. Have a little chat with us about what your eating plans are for the weekend, if you like. And there's a couple of competitions happening this afternoon too. We have got a 500 dirham voucher to spend at the Gorgeous Flower Company. Maybe if you've missed Valentine's Day yesterday, or you didn't get any flowers and just want to treat yourself, it really is very easy. You just need to send a little message with your name to 4001. We're also giving away dinner for two at BB's. We've got Chef Alex joining us in the studio this afternoon. This is one of Dubai's most exciting new restaurants, and he's feeding us, so he's definitely winning my heart this afternoon. We've already enjoyed a really fantastic super green hummus, and he's currently plating up our next course. But if you'd like to win dinner for two, it's a caviar and truffle tasting menu, complete with a little drink too. You just need to guess the ingredient. One second, oh, you're getting very keen.
Guess the ingredient.
Clue number three, please.
In various countries around the world. In Denmark, it is known as English sauce. In the US, it is offered in a thicker consistency. In Japan, the name is shortened, and in El Salvador, it is called the English salsa.
The English salsa. If you know what the English salsa is, just send in your guess and your name to 4001. We've just had a little plate of food put in front of us. Chef Alex, what is in store?
So we have the tropical tabbouleh. So it's once again, it's an Eastern dish, a little bit twisted. Instead of just parsley, we use kale. We have red onions, we have cucumbers, we have cherry tomatoes, we have feta cheese, and green oil and a Dijon mustard dressing.
I'm having a little bite. That is so delicious. That's exactly what I would actually, this would be a brilliant lunch dish. This is on your bites menu.
This is one of our another bites. Yeah, it's a very refreshing. It's a salad. It's crunchy. It's, you know, it's a little bit creamy through the feta. On top of we have some smoked shiitake mushrooms to give a little bit of a crunch and, you know, a little bit of a different.
It's actually really comforting. I think of salads being kind of a bit boring and, you know, something you have on the side, but this has got real guts to it because I think of kale being a slightly heavier vegetable and you have got that feta. Why did you choose kale, Chef Alex?
Again, kale is 2018. It's one of these years where, you know, vegan, vegetarians are plant plant diet is really upcoming, and kale has always been around. It's been recently also like a lot of kale salads, and instead of just parsley, where you know sometimes it just sticks between your teeth. kale is fresh, it's crunchy, it's something something different, and it's healthy in the same wise, same time.
I'm crunching away. So it's curly kale in here. I just had some shiitake mushrooms, some little cherry tomatoes, or just different.
Yes.
Yeah. But all different colours. It will work the heirloom variety. So pale green cherry tomatoes in here, chopped red onion, and really delicious creamy feta. Ava, what are you thinking?
So I'm usually not a kale advocate.
Advocate, not even a fan. I do not advocate kale any form.
I just think we talk it up too much. And I think that all greens have some benefit or the other, and kale just kind of gets the limelight unnecessarily. But I like the fact that the kale is adding a really nice crunch. That actually is usually my issue with kale. I find it quite chewy. I find it challenging to cook with. But in this case, that texture is actually working in its favor because you get this really nice crunch. And I love, can you just repeat what was in the dressing? Because it's not overdressed. It's perfect, but it's just so well balanced. I love the dressing on this.
So it is show mustard vinaigrette, if you like. What the difference gives to it is the green oil, which is it's basil and the mint oil. It's refreshing. It's changed a little bit the flavors around just for a normal vinaigrette.
Alright.
Yes, for me, I really like. I'm an advocate of kale, so I like kale.
She has to say that.
But this is the kale season. This season in the farmers market, we have a lot of kale. So this is a good way of having kale because the pieces are so small that it's nice and, I can eat it, that it's really nice. I like the balance. I actually like it a lot.
This is something I could make at home. I'm a horrible chef, but I really, you could quite easily recreate this at home. Obviously, oil is a bit more complicated. What do you cook at home, Chef Alex? Who does the cooking and what's a favorite at home?
My wife.
Really?
Yes.
It's always the case. It's always the case.
She's a brilliant cook, so I can't top that.
Is that because you've had enough of the kitchen by the time you get home?
Yes, it's a mixture between. I mean, we have guests, and we have a celebration where I'm happy to cook and love cooking. It's not about that. It's just, give it a break, and it's her favorite. It's her relaxing part of the day. She really loves it. So And
you've got kids. So what are the kind of the favorites for what kind of meals are they enjoying at home? Please tell me that they eat, some beige freezer tapas like all the other children that I know.
No, my daughter actually eats octopus.
Really? Yes. How old is she?
She's just turned six.
She likes octopus. Yes. How would she eat that?
Grilled, ceviches, you name it. It's carpaccio. She is going nuts on it. I mean, it's really. We obviously, coming from the restaurant business, we try not to, or we not even thinking of when we go eating out to look to the menu and you find chicken nuggets, you find French fries, all this kind of. We're not promoting that. We're really trying to have our children eating the same what we're eating, or at least trying it. And
I think trying it's the challenging bit. My three-year-old just goes, no, 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 no. And it's so frustrating. And then you find yourself, reaching for the freezer tapas.
Well, it's about pushing, not the boundaries, but exposing them to a lot of different ingredients, a lot of different cuisines. So they're growing up with this and not limited to a certain, it's always pushing, especially the youngsters to... to grow up in an environment we're living in and which is good.
Who would you most like to book a table at BB's?
Oh.
Anybody. Celebrity would be great, obviously.
I don't know. I don't have a favorite. I mean,
Really put you on the spot here.
Yes, it is.
Okay, you can come back.
Yeah, I think about it.
You think about it. Okay, we're going to hear your food fantasy later on in the show as well. But the menu, as we said, covers numerous cuisines. It has got that real kind of Eastern leaning. Is there one dish on the menu that you're really the most proud of?
The chopped kale tabbouleh is it's my favorite salad, I think, on the menu. The most proud of, I think, is the jackfruit bao. It's an uptake, again, supporting the vegan or vegetarian option.
A bao vegan, but kind of?
Yes, it's. Yeah? We're working right now on a recipe to make the bao actually just vegan. I mean, the only thing which contains at this stage is milk. So we're trying different plant-based milks, which are either soy or almond or coconut milk. It's just to replace and then really include the, you know, the vegan community with that. And we have already the ingredients, the main, not protein, but the main ingredient for the filling. It's just to transfer the bao into the vegan option as well.
One of the must-order dishes, I think it's fair to say, is the shabu shabu. So you were talking a lot about the social aspect of dining. Mm-hmm. Can you tell us a little bit about that dish? Because it's suggested that you share it between four.
Yes. Now, shabu shabu is a hot pot. Now, you can... Shabu shabu is really like from Japan, but a hot pot is from any abound from Asia. And it's very social because you're sitting around the table and you cook your own... not soup, I would say, but like your dish. And it comes with noodles, it comes with beef, it comes with lobsters, it comes with prawn, it comes with dolma. So it's literally like you have your burner in the middle of the table, you have your pot, which comes with the soy broth, and then you have your noodles inside, your vegetables inside, and you cook your meats and your lobsters inside the pot, and you infuse obviously the flavors and, you know, the vegetables cooking in there. So it becomes really not intense, but you know, it's a show, vice versa, also interaction with each other. Like, you know, you wanna share your food. You cook for your friend, for your husband, for your wife. It's, you know, it's really, really social and interaction, and everything comes to life.
And it's been popular in the restaurant so far?
Yes, indeed.
I think that's a really lovely way of doing it, actually. I think that's why I like fondue, not just because of the cheese, but because of that sharing communal aspect of it.
You start talking, you know, it's not just sitting around, you have your plate or your bowl and you're eating. It's like you interact, like, you know, you can have it raw, you can cook it well done. It's just automatically a natural interaction between each other.
So as we said at BB's, you're working alongside your wife. How's that been for family relations?
Well, we've been working actually since 2006 together. So yeah, it's fine. Again, she is working, covering a different aspect of the restaurant business, so we're not really in direct contact.
That might help.
That might help, yes, definitely. But yeah, you keep business to business and family to family. So
I think that sounds very sensible. What was the first thing you mastered as a chef that you remember kind of, this is the first thing I've cooked and created?
Cooked and created. I think going back in the times when I was working as an apprentice back in Germany, and we did our own liver dumplings.
That's very German.
It's very Bavarian. Worse. It's a very interesting thing to do. It's you know, you have calf's liver, which you mince, and then you add your spices and your bread and your eggs, and it looks disgusting, really. Once it's raw, and then you know, you roll it up and you boil it like to like a, let's say, a meat bowl, yeah, and then you cook. But it tastes maybe not like on the show and whatever, you know, international cuisine wise, but in the Bavarian heavy cold time in the winter, you eat it with a lovely veal broth. You have some vegetables inside. It's really yum.
Comfort food.
Mm.
And you mentioned you've actually come from a pretty foodie family.
Yes.
So lots of food in the house growing up. Was there a big inspiration?
To be honest, until the last moment, I didn't decide to become a chef. So
really?
Yes.
What was the other plan?
No idea. It was very funny. It's like my parents coming from the industry, they've been in the restaurant since they, you know, start working. My grandma, my grandparents, they cook at home. We had a garden, they grow vegetables. We had chickens, rabbits, you name it, the whole farm at home. We would slaughter at home, we would cook at home, we make sausages, you name it. And so I was always exposed to homegrown food, to, let's say, good food or like home-cooked food, flavors, etc. But it was not really inspired to, you know, work on weekends and bank holidays.
Yeah, the hours aren't so great as a chef, as you've proven by being awake till 4 o'clock this morning cooking bao for us and for diners this weekend.
Yes, but you know, once you're a kid, you know, you see the different world. But yeah, it's like at some stage I tried different stages of, like, I don't know, from a metal worker to I can't even remember, like that was gardening or whatever, and it just didn't appeal. And then my dad said, look, let's try cooking. I mean, you hang out in the kitchen all the time. You eat every time we cook something, we bake something. So I went into the kitchen and it took a day and I loved it.
Wow. So it felt right from that step. It's interesting now, I think, in decades gone by, people fell into cooking, whereas now with the kind of the rise of social media and celebrity chefs, and as we said, shows like MasterChef, people are seeing it as a real valid career move and aspiring to be a big chef rather than working their way up the ranks kind of by accident, which can only be a good thing for the food industry, we hope. When we come back, we've got another clue so you can win dinner for two at BB's. And we're going to be trying some more food. What is a bow nut? We'll find out later.
Dubai Today.
Get in touch with the show. Text us on 4001.
This is Dubai Today.
In association with King's College Hospital London in Dubai, the enduring art of care. Registration is now closed.
I'm joined in the studio by chef and co-founder Chef Alex, Orit from Boon Coffee, and Ava from Frying Pan Adventures. Ava, what's happening with Frying Pan at the moment?
So at Frying Pan, we are right in the middle of peak season. And what that means is we are doing all of our food experiences. We have four right now that we're offering. Our two food walks, which are Middle Eastern food pilgrimage, and our Little India on a Plate tour. These are about 4-hour-ish experiences where we take people from one restaurant to another, essentially eating our way through a very gluttonous evening. But we combine...
How many people would normally go on a tour?
About, it could be anywhere from 8 to 12 people. We try to keep the groups really tight. And the goal is...
Yeah, you don't want to lose anybody on the winding back streets.
No, and the goal is not just to eat, it's also to combine storytelling. There's a lot of history and culture, a lot of research that goes into each of these tours that we continue to invest in, actually, as the tours get served up. We also offer an Emirati cooking class that we do in conjunction with the Asila restaurant at the Radisson Blue.
How interesting.
Yeah, this has been sort of something that I have wanted to do since we started Frying Pan back in 2013, and now is finally that year where we have the perfect opportunity. This restaurant comes up. Chef Uwe Mikkel, who is like a mentor of mentors for all chefs in Dubai. He came out with a cookbook. His restaurant is there. Chef Rabe is the one who teaches the cooking class. And I just think it's a great way to get connected with the ingredients that get used in Emirati cooking. And then we do our desert experience, an early morning, as well as now we're offering an afternoon version. And we offer this on the weekends, where we basically go out with Royal Shaheen, the falconers, the really sexy falconers from South Africa.
Wow. I don't want to know, actually. Don't elaborate.
I'll leave it to your imagination. But with them, and they're even sexier, falcons, actually. Ooh.
You can say
not
sexy
allowed
bird.
To say the word sexy.
That's okay.
Yeah, sexy birds.
So this is an experience that so obviously would be great if you've got any guests in town, but do you have lots of residents doing the desert trips
actually,
as well?
Actually, we do have a lot of residents. And in fact, we had a resident who reached out to us a while ago who wanted to just do it. I mean, we only have groups of 12 people. Compare that with any other desert experience.
Yeah, where you're going out in convoy.
And you're going into the conservation reserve. I think only about six companies are allowed in there. It's already exclusive, but she wanted it literally just the four of them. And we just block off that day for you. You go in there alone and you have the entire desert pretty much to yourself. It's really fantastic.
And how do you incorporate food into those desert trips?
We have three main elements, one of which is food. The food is actually a picnic that's provided by Baker & Spice. And it's a very simple, just bringing together core ingredients of the region like hummus and nigella seeds and labneh and kaak bread. And the goal is that the desert speaks for itself. You need simplicity to be able to complement that, you know, pristine, that striking nature of the desert. So we keep it really simple. And you have your, you know, that's time you can get creative. So you use your bread and kind of get really creative with ingredients at play in the picnic. We also plant a gaaf tree. And that tree is basically given by the Gumbuk. Yeah, so we work very
Gumbuk.
Closely with Give a Gaaf program under Gumbuk. So everyone gets to plant gaaf trees. And you name the tree that you're planting with your friend or whoever you're planning it with.
That sounds really special.
And then there's an interactive training the falcons show, and that's a little bit of a surprise.
Something
element.
For the CV, isn't it?
Absolutely. So, you know, it's quite an intense morning, really for people who want to get very connected with nature, because the Royal Shaheen team really, they can read the newspaper, they can read the desert like you would read the newspaper.
Wow.
I mean, they're fantastic. So those are the four experiences.
And I hear you're doing some more things with schools.
Exactly. So we're really excited. Next week is our first ever. We're working with Universal American School on their Week Without Walls program.
What does that mean?
Well, it means that you get out of the classroom and you engage in real life experiences that will leave you sort of enriched with a different kind of knowledge than if you were sitting within the walls of your classroom, essentially. And we are one of their local experience providers. So it's going to be a week of different food experiences. And our goal is to show students that no longer is food just about ingredients on a plate. It's actually about the storytelling that goes on in the food industry. Today, that's really what it's about. So we are going to take them on different experiences every day that capture different kinds of stories. And we want them to be very thoughtful about the implicit kinds of stories that are being told by different influential players in the food industry, from going to a local organic farm and meeting the farmers, to doing a cooking class, to meeting with Emiliano from Signor Pomodoro. He's a guy whose restaurant he was on the stage of bankruptcy, and then how he kind of picked it back up again.
Wow, so looking at all aspects.
We want to look at all. We're going to meet with Dalia Dogmok, the incredible food personality and cookbook author that she is, and really talk about how do you tell a food story through all of the different mediums she uses, writing, the magazine, her YouTube channel, her work as a brand ambassador. So we'd really, and of course we're going to do food tours with them. And we will go to the Camel Milk Chocolate Factory. So, for example, the reason we're taking them there is because who doesn't want to have chocolate? But also because we have articulated that story of the Camel Milk Chocolate Factory through our podcast. So how do you capture a food story through the oral medium? You know, like how do you listen to a story and really bring it alive? So we really want to show them all of the different elements that we see being popular in the world.
Oh, that sounds wonderful. So anyone can just contact you through Frying Pan Adventures for any of the tours or experiences.
Absolutely.
Chef Alex, you've presented us another dish. What do we have here?
Okay, this is one. Well, this is two dishes, but the same, but not the same.
But different.
We have the bao. Okay, so we have two different baos. One is the jackfruit one. We talked about before. It's a jackfruit. It's a fruit, but we make it into a savory option where we use an unripe jackfruit and then we cook it with different spices. And talking again about Eastern cuisine, we have a touch-up of the Indian spice range on this one.
Which ones? What's in there?
Well, we're talking about ginger, we talk about garlic, we talk about chili, and
you can taste some coconut in there. Is that coconut in there?
No, coconut.
I can taste something nutty.
So this is meat-free then?
It's meat-free, yes.
And this is on the bao menu?
Yes, it is.
And some red cabbage, really finely sliced. Now, for anyone who doesn't know what a bao is, how would you describe it both taste-wise and...
Well, think about a Pac-Mac, right? Pac-Man.
Pac-Man, yeah.
Yes, so this is what it looks like. And what it is, it's a steamed bun. Okay, it's coming back to the very early in the show, what we talked about, bread. It's a bread from the Eastern Far East, when we talk Asia. And it's a yeast bread, if you like. So what you do is you have your flour again, you have your yeast, your milk, and you brew it. After brewing, you know, you knead it, you fold it, and then you steam it. What the difference is to ours ones, well, they have more flavor, of course, more fluffy, but we toast them once they're finished. So they give you a little bit of a texture and flavor to it.
Yeah, it's got a kind of a, not like a crust on it, but you can see where it's been cooked rather than just purely steamed. And they're about a centimetre and a half thick, really. They are. It's not like a flatbread or... And
no.
It's so circular, and in the middle we've got this jackfruit. And is there some kind of like a sriracha mayo? What's the sauce?
It's spicy mayonnaise.
It's delicious. Oh, I know you've got a mouthful, so I'll come back to you in a second. Or what are you thinking?
I really thought it was chicken, actually, when I first picked it up. So I was reluctant to taste it, but... It really is a mix of flavors, and you feel like you're having a proper sandwich kind of meal with so much flavor. It's really
nice. It's really quite spicy, but
yes,
just
but
it takes me just the edge of spice.
Are you sure there is no chicken in here?
No.
Really,
but
the texture, yeah?
I think we come to a topic later. Again, vegetarian, vegan, jackfruit considered as a dish, when you cook it... especially when it's raw and ripe, it could be a replacement for meat.
All right. You're looking very happy and satisfied there with your bao. And are you also eyeing up dessert?
I was very happy and satisfied with my kale salad too, but he put a fried donut with sugar coated strawberries. So I can't even think straight now. I'm lost. It's not even fair. It's not fair.
Do you consider yourself to be generally a pretty healthy eater?
Yes, I do. So when I see donuts right in front of me, I can't. Who can help this?
And you'll be at the farmer's market tomorrow morning.
Yes, and buying more kales and enjoying everybody.
You're going to make a little bit of kale tabbouleh as inspired by Chef Alex?
Yes, and for sure. That's why I'm eating it slowly. So I can figure out what's in it. And of course, we have at the farmer's market, we have great cheese from Carla. So I can't wait until I go in the morning and try to find out what happened during the week while I taste all her cheese.
Crafty. So for anyone that hasn't been to the farmer's market before, what can people expect? Where is it? What time is it taking place?
It's at Bay Avenue. It usually starts from 7 to 1. It's a lot of fun for anybody who's coming in. It's a lot of community feel to it because we get to see each other every week. And we have our coffees there. And there's Baker & Spice is doing fantastic breakfast. And we have Merzam chocolate is there
I
also.
I love Merzam chocolate.
Fantastic. So, and Dima cheese from Carla is there. So, and all the farmers have really great fresh products.
And really well priced as well. I think exactly. That's a big misconception. Yeah. People think farmers market and think it's going to be premium prices. And it's not. It's so affordable.
It's actually gone down, I feel, over the years. It's become so much. It is very, very reasonable.
Yes, and right now it's tomato season. And
yes.
Oh, fantastic.
So you have beautiful red tomatoes and the cherry tomatoes are so sweet. It's the perfect time.
So that's taking place tomorrow, Bay Avenue in Business Bay. So just behind those buildings there.
Behind Taj Hotel.
Yes, exactly. For any foodies or anyone that wants to go along and try a few samples of cheese and bring the kids along too. It's very family friendly. People bring rugs, sit down, have their breakfast, enjoy the view and enjoy the food as well. Chef Alex, you're a busy, busy bee. We really want to hear about the short rib bow. He's delivering me a spoon. Thank you, sir. We enjoyed the jackfruit, as you said, a really interesting meat substitute. And we did have a message saying, desperate to try the jackfruit, please save me one. So sorry. It's all gone. But we also tried the short rib bow, which is really sticky, really rich, and actually really beautifully offset by the bow, which is kind of a plainer taste. And I think it can really carry that flavor. What's in that short rib?
Well, in this short rib, we have obviously short rib, which is the main ingredient, which is on the smoked side. So what we do is we give the short rib a rub, then we add some smoked liquid, and then we braise it for 12 hours overnight. So it's really, really soft and really tender once you have it in the bun. Then we have obviously toasted cashew nuts and chili black pepper sauce, and then spring onions on top.
Because my concern when I saw it was it was going to be really soggy because you've got that softness of the braised short rib and this kind of the sponginess of the bow, but it's actually got real crunch to it. I think you introducing that spring onion.
The spring onions and one more ingredient is the pickled cucumber, which obviously cuts through the fat and the sweetness and it gives a little bit of texture to it as well.
Yeah, really, really well balanced. We will get onto the donut that Orit's been tempting about, but you've just put another dish in front of us, a beautiful bowl. What's in here?
Now, this one is, we haven't got on the menu yet, so
ooh,
it's
are we the first
thing,
to
it's
try?
Going to be something exciting.
Oh, fantastic.
Looking forward. We call it the photon. So it's
photon.
A photon, yeah. So it's a crossbreed between a four and a one ton.
Mm.
So
love it.
So it's a four. It's a Vietnamese broth dish soup. You want to call it? It's originally based on mainly chicken. So when you think back, without even having been to Vietnam, but once you were back in as a child, you've been ill. What your mom gives you is a chicken soup.
That's exactly what I was thinking. This would be amazing if you've got a cold coming on.
Yes.
But it's a clearish broth, full of greens. So what? Well, I'm going to ask our resident foodies what can you spot on the bowl, Ava?
So I can see coriander, mint. I don't quite know what these little microgreens are. They look like sprouted something.
Yes. Brussels
sprouts. Brussels sprouts.
Not a Brussels sprout soup.
But I do love the broth. It's clearly there's a lot of work that's gone into that broth. Usually, when you see pho being replicated outside of Vietnam, it's a broth that falls flat. But this one has a lot of depth to it. So I'd love to know how long it took. How long does this broth take to make?
12 hours.
Twelve hours.
Yes, because, if you want to have a good broth, it's going to take time. Like everything else in the kitchen takes time. It's yeah. Once you cook the chicken broth, obviously with chicken bones or the whole chicken, what we mix in between to get obviously more flavor into it, but to get the sweetness out of the bones and out of the chicken, it takes time. So we really cook it overnight, every night, like we do the bows.
That's why you're enjoying the coffee, yes. Chef Alex. And tell us about the wonton.
So yeah, it's a chicken wonton. So it's a wonton, but inside we have a chicken wing spiced up with ginger, lots of black pepper, garlic, and salt and pepper, obviously, coriander.
This is really, really delicious. As you said, it's comforting, really comforting. But I think the portion size is really smart because it's not too much. It wouldn't overwhelm you for the rest of the dinner. It just gives you a really lovely burst of warm flavors. Mm. And there's nothing heavy there at all. Obviously, the wonton, but you have two in this bowl. So it's not on the menu yet.
No, it's not on the menu. It's coming soon.
It will be coming soon. Fantastic. Thank you so much for this.
You're
now,
welcome.
Orit, I'm not going to make you wait any longer.
Yes, I'm going to torture long enough.
We're going to have Chef Alex from BB's take on donuts. It's a bow nut.
It's a bow nut, yes, indeed.
Has this ever been done before?
I don't think so. We didn't research it, but, it's the three of us coming together and sitting around the table and discussing the menu, have food trials over and over again. I mean, I can't even begin and where we ended on it. And suddenly one day it disappears on the table and was like, what's that? Well, it's a fried bow. So, okay, but it's what we're going to do with it. It's very soft. It's very fluffy. It has a salty texture without the sugar around it. And I was like, what are we going to do? So let's put sugar around it. Okay, let's put sugar around it. Let's taste it. It's like, man, this is a donut.
You made a donut.
Like, and I was like, what?
It's with a bow nut.
So here you go. And then
you need to trademark this, guys.
Yes. Well, on the case.
Oh, are you really?
Yes.
So it looks just like a filled donut covered in sugar, and you serve it with, I can see, strawberries and
chantilly cream.
Okay, we're gonna be trying that. In fact, go on, Chef, I'll let you get off the microphone. You can pass a couple around to us. I'll let you serve me the bonnet. Oh, fantastic, thank you so much. So how do people eat it? Do you tear it apart, knife
so
and fork
again? Well, not again. I mean, the thing is, lots of people have specific way to eat their donut, so we leave it really up to every customer to itself how you want to eat it. So that's why we did not fill it. So we're putting the cream and the jam on the side, so you can eat it without, you can eat it just with jam.
It's quite English though. It's like a scone.
It is, yes, and you can put cream on it as you like it. I mean, it's
so fluffy.
The freedom is yours.
And in fact, I've just picked it up and it barely weighs anything at all.
Yes.
It's really, really clever. So you steam it.
Yeah, it's again, it's a whole proving whole workout before that. Then obviously it's proven, it's rises, we steam it, and then we fry it.
I was going to ask, it's fried. I was like, it's a healthy alternative to a donut. But it's not healthier. Can we go with that?
It's homemade.
It's homemade. Okay, perfect. I'm joined in the studio this afternoon by Chef Alex Thump, co-founder of one of Dubai's most exciting new restaurants, Bibi's at DIFC, Arv Ahmed from Frying Pan Adventures, and Orit Mohammed, the founder of the Boon Coffee Company. I'm sitting here basically covered in sugar, so it's a really good thing this is radio. We're trying the bow nuts, and we want to treat you to dinner for two at Bibi's. It's a caviar and truffle tasting menu worth 825 dirhams. You just need to
guess the ingredient.
Orit, it's a final clue. This is your last chance.
Yes.
What is it?
Today's mystery ingredient is often used to flavor chicken, beef, turkey, chili, salads, pasta, and also in soups. It's also a popular topping on traditional grilled cheese and toast. And it's also one of the ingredients in Chef Alex's short ribs that are featured in today's Thursday brunch.
Oh, so if you know, you've only got a few more minutes to get your text into us, 4001, with your name and your guess for the mystery ingredient. Now, Chef Alex, I asked you earlier about who you'd cook for, and it was a tricky question, but I want to ask even bigger. What's your food fantasy?
Food fantasy. One fantasy or one dream, I think I completed already like a few years back when I went to Japan twice. I had really good company to show me around. But you know, apart from Japan, I think I would like to go to Vietnam and have a really good trip around, pack, rucksack, No, nothing fancy. Just travel and eat on the street.
Eat.
Yes.
Eat. What would you eat? What's the kind of ultimate street food that you'd be ordering?
Well, obviously, it's one of the four to really get the authentic way and see what it really tastes on the street. Unfortunately, I have not been, so I get the support from different people who guide me to create the foods what we have in BB's. But soups, fresh seafood, prawns from shrimps, anything what is, crawling around there.
That doesn't sound like much of a fantasy on the crawling
it's not
front.
Dog, it's
Now, something we talked about earlier was jackfruit, which was one of the ingredients in your bao. It's brought us on to the subject of meat substitutes. And I just wanted to bring back a news story on Quorn, which is a very, it's a British brand, but it's very well known in the UK, and it's on course to become a $1 billion business. It's part of a booming industry of meat alternatives, but news is now showing that actually it's a far cry from the plant-based diet that so many vegans are really striving towards. As a chef, how are you feeling about these meat alternatives?
Look, alternatives, just to find something to what looks, taste, and test the texture of meat, I think is not really the right thing. I mean, if you really want to eat beef or meat or anything, I think like jackfruit, there are many different plants who will substitute the ingredient, but to make a fake meat, it's just, I don't know.
Alright, you're shaking your head.
For me, I've been vegetarian for a long time, so I don't see the necessity of having fake meat. I could enjoy whatever meal it is as is. I don't long to have beef. I don't dream about having meat some different way. So for me, I don't see why I would substitute. I'd rather have something
I think
natural.
A lot of people use it if they decide to go vegetarian as almost like a stopgap, because Quorn has now got about 100 different products. So mince, sausages, goat's cheese. So they're kind of trying to literally be a substitute. So you'd make Quorn mince lasagna. You're frowning at me.
Why not have spinach lasagna? It's fantastic. Yeah.
So I think that's the interesting thing. And I think a lot of people feel like they're being missold a bit. People also really question what it actually is. It's called a microprotein, and it's fermented in vats from a fungus. And then they add glucose, fixed nitrogen, vitamins, minerals, and then heat treat it.
That's too many ingredients in one item. So whatever it is, it doesn't sound too natural.
And I think that's been the big misconception over the years. This has been a healthy choice, whereas it sounds like it's really kind of chemically grown, shall we say. But sales have steadily increased, and it was reported last week that leapt globally 16% and expected to be worth $1 billion by 2027. How are you incorporating kind of meat alternatives? You obviously talking about the jackfruit, and you offer vegan alternatives as well. Are you mindful of in terms of catering for vegans?
Yes, I think not just being 18, but I think the last 2 years generation are really looking into more healthy eating, health conscious. Yes, we're talking about cancer. It's a big deal. You really should look out on what you eat, because what you eat, you become. And your body.
I'm eating a bao nut right now. So I feel like you really should not be telling me this, but it's got strawberries on the side.
Well, you become a strawberry.
But no, I think everyone is a lot more mindful now. And what's interesting is we're seeing rises of things like non-alcoholic distilled spirits.
Indeed.
In the UK, the younger generations are much more health conscious. Everyone's fetishizing being busy. People want to be successful in their careers. People want to be looking good, and the food is playing a huge part in that. So it'd be interesting to see how that kind of unfolds. What are you seeing in terms of Frying Pan Adventures? Who's coming to you? Or is it what kind of age groups generally?
We see people above the age of, I would say, around 20, 30 plus, all the way up to 70. I think there's no bar for people who like to eat good food. And of course, we're self-selecting for people who are adventurous eaters. So people with a lot of food restrictions, some of them might just, tag along with more adventurous friends. But in general, we are seeing the people who have less of like the allergies and the, you know, difficult, like the challenging diets to deal with in Old Dubai at least.
And you're looking at Middle Eastern cuisine and, as you say, the Little India tour. And are many of those vegetarian based?
The Indian one is 99% vegetarian. That's why I think it's so interesting that the world has to look for meat substitutes, because why don't you just look at India? For example, jackfruit is something that people routinely have in India and they don't even think of it as a meat substitute.
It's just an ingredient.
It's a standalone ingredient in and of itself. So you don't even miss the meat. And interestingly, the guide, who is my sister, who runs the Indian Trail, is extremely carnivorous. And she runs that experience. And honestly, you do not miss the meat at the end of that tour.
Really, really interesting. All right. Well, going back to the bao nuts, you know how you said ladies don't like licking their fingers? I keep licking everything's fingers. It's so nice.
That's the challenge. And what I really liked about Beebe's when I went is the food is a really fantastic quality, but it's not a pretentious restaurant. Mm. The staff were fantastic. It had a really intimate feel, but really lively and fun. So we're actually going to announce our mystery ingredient. Actually, Abba, I'll let you do it. What was the mystery ingredient?
Would you like me to do it?
Oh my God, yeah, I'm going to massacre the name. I'll say it in my pronunciation, okay. And then you can give it in the correct. I think it is Worcestershire. That's my pronunciation of the day.
It was wrong.
Worcestershire. All right, from Boone, thank you so much for joining us. I'll see you at the farmer's market in the morning. Chef Alex from Beebe's, a real pleasure, and thank you for feeding us. The food was just exquisite. And Ava from Frying Pan Adventures, all the very best, and look forward to seeing you soon.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.